morning is, and I hope I'm pronouncing this correctly, Friet versus Geyser. You may proceed. Appellant may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Pete Vile on behalf of Appellants Jay Friet, who's with us this morning with his wife and son, William. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes, if I might, for rebuttal. The issue today is whether Jay may seek judicial review of an LLC operating agreement that vitally affects his rights in the LLC. The respondents say no. Although Jay owns half of the LLC and is bound by the agreement.
Let me ask some questions just to help you in your argument. The summary judgment order basically says there's no standing in your client to bring this action under the limited liability company statute. Does not say anything about whether or not they're standing under the Uniform Declaratory Judgment Act. And my first question is, did the court indicate any ruling with respect to standing under the Declaratory Judgment Act?
No.
Okay, so I take it that the court essentially got to the merits and said that there is no standing because of the limited liability company statute, and that therefore you're out of fair reading?
I believe that it is. I would say it modestly different. The court dismissed a case we didn't bring. The Declaratory Judgment Act and derivative actions are covered by CR 23.1 and by RCW 25.17.370. We did not, in Jay's complaint, invoke either. We invoked the Declaratory Judgment Act, which is an entirely different statute. The court didn't address it, in part because the papers filed by the respondents largely ignored it. They repeated again and again, this is a derivative act, and because he's not a member, he can't bring it. And the judge said, right, dismissed it with prejudice.
Well, weren't the rights to be declared the right of whether Catherine could represent Carol?
Absolutely.
And whether he had a right to actually challenge Catherine's rights.
Absolutely. That's exactly what it was.
Well, aren't those a declaration of rights under the, of either party's rights under the LLC agreement and the statute?
Yes, they are. And the declaratory judgment, if
and so didn't the court, when it said he's not a member, he does not have member rights, and this is a derivative action for purposes of the LLC action, therefore he doesn't have standing to bring it, isn't that a merits declaration?
I don't know whether it was a merits declaration, but it was wrong. The declaratory judgment.
Well, that's a different argument than what I'm just trying to make sure. Isn't the court there declaring the rights of the parties and then dismissing based on that declaration?
I suppose that could be argued, although she didn't address any of the rights of the parties other than to say he's not a member and therefore can't bring an action for a derivative action, which is not what he was bringing. I think a fairer reading, Your Honor, is that she didn't really reach the merits because he wasn't trying to bring a derivative action. His action was not on behalf of the LLC. It was on behalf of him. He owns, and it's undisputed, half of the interest in the LLC, whether he is a member or merely an owner. In violation of the operating agreement, which is a contract for purposes of the Declaratory Judgment Act, the respondents fired him as the property manager, cut off his health care, his salary, his apartment allowance, stopped all distributions from the LLC, and are threatening to liquidate property that has been in the family for nearly a century.
Which are the rights of members only?
No. Those are the rights that he has. Wholly apart from whether or not he is a member, those are rights he has as an owner of the LLC, even if he has them only as a transferee. And the thrust of the Declaratory Judgment Act, which the court ignored, is that any party whose rights are affected by a contract, Jays are, they're governed by that operating agreement, may have determined any question of construction about the contract and seek a declaration of rights, status, and other legal relations. That's what he did. His right as property manager isn't a right of the LLC. His right to health care, his right to distributions, aren't interests of the LLC. The LLC doesn't care whether Jay is the property manager or Fred Flintstone is the property manager.
But this wasn't an employment termination suit.
No, but the firing took place in contumacious disregard of the operating agreement. He didn't sue them for breach of contract. He sued, look at this agreement, I want a declaration of what my rights are under it, and I also want injunctive relief enforcing your declaration, which the Declaratory Judgment Act also authorizes. At 724.8080, it says, further relief may be granted where appropriate. The Ronkin case, which we have cited to you, says further relief includes injunctive relief, and that's necessary so that a court can enforce its own orders and decrees. That's what he thought. The cutting off of distributions doesn't, it's not a claim of the LLCs. They don't care whether the money accumulates or whether it's distributed. The threat to liquidate the property that has been in his family for four generations isn't an LLC right. It doesn't care whether the property is distributed and money is invested elsewhere. That's his right. Those rights are personal. His interest in the operating agreement is direct, and it is substantial, and it exists, and his rights are bound by that operating agreement. And the Declaratory Judgment Act authorizes him to seek judicial review. Respondents have it as a catch-22. He's bound by the operating agreement. He has no rights apart from it, but as they would have it, and as the trial court ruled, he has no rights to judicial review. None. Not only...
Counsel, time's short.
Please.
Yesterday afternoon, we communicated interest in a case out of Delaware, two cases out of Delaware, that go, I believe, to the basis of the court's ruling, and that is whether or not this action can be characterized as direct or derivative. The Thule case sets out a test. I'd like your view on how, if at all, that applies.
You may answer.
Thank you. The Thule case is helpful to us, I believe, and your question provoked us to look, and we found another case that I think may be even more helpful from Delaware, which relies on Thule, the Activision case. I've given copies to opposing counsel, and I have one that I would like to make available to the court.
I think, generally speaking, you just file a statement of supplemental authorities.
Will do.
Case.
Will do.
Okay. Okay.
Your Honors, David Tingstad for the Geisers.
Counsel, did you ask the court to dismiss it for lack of standing under the Uniform Declaratory Judgment Act?
No. But I don't believe we had to, because I think the fundamental question that the court is asking in that line of reasoning is, can a declaratory judgment action be derivative? And the answer is absolutely. And one need only look at the Pollack case that was cited.
Well, really, the concern is the word standing shows up in the summary judgment order.
Yes.
There are two sentences that reflect on the LLC agreement and the statute, and whether the court was using standing relative to standing under the LLC Act and the agreement or the UDJA. That was the concern.
Understood, Your Honor. And so if I might address directly the Thule case and the Culverson case, because I never really believed that Thule was anything other than Ditka up until January when this new case came out, and because it certainly is, I would agree, and perhaps the court would as well, that The determination of whether something is derivative or direct, the case law is far from clear. And so I certainly appreciated the Tooley analysis, but Culverson certainly brought it to the fore. And so who's been harmed? And so the harm, listen, everything that has been alleged, whether you're talking about the injunction or whether you're talking about the declaratory relief that is sought, is harm to the LLC because they're saying the LLC acted without authority. You could boil it all down by saying, they're saying, look, this was all ultra-virus. It was ultra-virus because the LLC should not have relied upon the power of attorney, but it did. And they're asking that the LLC employed the manager. The LLC employed the property manager. The LLC had meetings. All of the things that were done were actions of the LLC. And one need only look at their claim for injunctive relief. They're asking that the LLC stop recognizing the power of attorney. They're asking that the LLC continue to employ the property manager.
Let me ask, counsel, if you're looking at the test that's set out in Tooley, the first question is who suffered the alleged harm, the corporation or the suing stockholders? I mean, the principals.
Certainly.
It would appear that there's an argument here that Mr. Freed suffered the alleged harm, not the LLC. And secondly, with respect to the second prong of the test, who would receive the benefit of any recovery or other remedy? Again, there's an argument here that it's Mr. Freed, not the LLC, who would satisfy that second test. And the other thing is, in the Tooley case, there's a case called Grimes that they refer to, which you might want to comment on, because it seems to me that it arguably supports the position of Mr. Freed here. That was a question of whether the corporation had improperly allowed certain contracts. And in that case, the Grimes court, another Delaware court, said it was direct, not derivative.
Certainly, Your Honor. So if you look at the harm, okay, if it is the LLC that is acting without proper authority, it is the LLC that is being harmed by definition because it's doing something it can't do.
Are you saying that's the LLC exclusively? Or are you saying that he hasn't suffered any harm?
Well, certainly actions have consequences, not denying that. But if you're looking at what relief would the court be granting, the court would be granting the relief saying, and working backwards up to the test, what is the harm that is being suffered? Well, we need to stop the LLC from terminating a property manager. We need to stop the LLC from terminating a manager. Remember, those are two different people. Okay, so here we are, and we're looking at what has the LLC done? Well, the LLC couldn't have done that. And so that relief that is going to cure a harm to the entity. It acted without proper authority. And so I might point the court to the Kobayashi case because there's an interesting distinction that the court makes there using the Tooley analysis. It looked at the declaratory judgment claim, and it said those are derivative. Those are derivative. Who should have owned the property in that case? Well, it should have been the LLC. The LLC should have owned the property, and they were looking for a declaration that happened in that case, which is exactly what we're looking at here.
Kobayashi, does that follow Tooley?
It does follow Tooley, yes.
Counsel, in Appellant's reply brief, they say, as transferee, he would be entitled to participate in a vote to dissolve or continue the LLC, and he holds a majority of the units entitled to vote. So isn't part of the relief here would be to not have the LLC sold, to have it stay in the family, and so on and so forth? If this case is dismissed, how does he protect his rights?
Well, I think you need to look at what his rights are. So he's a transferee. His exclusive right is to receive distributions and profit allocations. And that happens only in the event the LLC ever determines that there are any. And in other words, the LLC has the discretion to hold money for as long as it wants. And who makes that determination? The members do. So as a transferee, Mr. Freed has no right whatsoever other than to, he could argue about his percentage. That's a direct claim, and the case law says that.
Okay. How about the sale of the building?
He has no say in the say of the building. He has no interest in the assets of the LLC. And so Only the LLC does. And the legislature has made the determination twice, having adopted the LLC Act in 1994 and then a brand new one in January 1st, same policy determination. Only members have the right. Okay.
With regard to the guardianship piece of this, wouldn't any person have the right to petition for a guardianship? I mean, the statute is incredibly broad, and I assume that there would be filters and determine whether an action was frivolous and so forth, but isn't he entitled to say there should be a guardianship, a true guardianship proceeding here?
Well, I will give my answer and also reserve some time for Ms. Metka to answer that question.
You've got about 3 minutes.
3 minutes. Respectfully, I would say I don't know is the answer, and I don't think I have to know, because their complaint says we'll bring a separate guardianship petition. They haven't done that still to this day.
So you're not saying here that because of the dismissal of this case that somehow impacts the other case?
Their ability to bring a guardianship? I don't believe the dismissal of this case would preclude that or authorize it either way. I think it has no impact.
Counsel, I need to ask a question about voting rights. I couldn't find anything in the record that demonstrated that membership or the voting rights of membership had changed since the death of Mr. Freed's mother. So am I correct in understanding that there are 45 units of voting rights for the trust and about half that many for Carol?
I believe it's there are 50 total voting units. And no, there has been no change.
So does the trust have a majority of those units?
27 and a half and 22 and a half for Ms. Geiser directly.
Okay. So the trust can act, would have a majority of the votes on any decision by the existing managers at this point?
Yeah, the trust does have the majority. That's
so right. To the extent the trust has voted to go forward with anything, what difference does it make whether Catherine or Carol voted at all?
I think that's a very fair point, Your Honor. So with that, Your Honor, I would remind you that this is a case about Mr. Freet's status. And his status, and it's undisputed, he is a transferee. And a transferee, under whether you're looking at the LLC agreement or the LLC Act, he has no right to vote. And so because he has no right to vote, the legislature has made the policy decision. He also has no right derivatively to bring suit in the name of the LLC. And that's exactly what all of the relief he has sought here is attempting to do. And so all of the relief would prevent the LLC from acting. And because these are its actions of the LLC, his claims are derivative, he's not a member, he lacks standing to bring those claims. Whether those claims are for declaratory relief or whether they're for claims for termination.
But aren't you asking us to infer a lot from the two sentences that were placed in the summary judgment order as a declaration that because he's not a member, adding all these other interpretations?
Respectfully, Your Honor, I'm not. Because this is a de novo review, at least of that that order, and so the language of that order, I don't believe is binding on this court. Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Vial, the same question to you: why does it matter when the trust has a majority of the votes, and even if we reversed, we'd be right back where? All of the actions taken, the trust can take without her participation?
Two reasons. Mr. Tingstad, no doubt, inadvertently misstated it. The trust has a 22.5% interest. Catherine, improperly under the agreement on her mother's purported behalf, who hasn't been heard from for 3 years, has 27.5%. The numbers are just backwards from what he told you. The record will confirm that.
Well, the agreement in the record had more units in the trust, had as many units in the trust as the two sisters combined. That's what I'm trying to resolve factually.
I'm trying to help you, yeah. And I appreciate the questions. Initially, the trust had 45%, 22.5% for Marilyn, 22.5% for Carol.
Mm-hmm.
The trust distributed its 22.5% to Jay directly, so the trust is left with 22.5%. Initially, there were 55%.
No, voting rights, voting rights.
That's what I'm
saying.
He
doesn't have any voting rights.
Beg your pardon?
He doesn't have any.
He has governance units which determine how many voting rights. He has no voting rights as a transferee, correct. But the point is that at this point, there are only 50 voting rights in total by their view of the case. 50 voting rights in total, 22 and a half are for the trust, 27 and a half for Carol, who nobody's heard from. That's what the voting rights are. The counsel misstated it. May I turn to other issues? I think the crux was in a question from Judge Trickey. What if we dismiss this? Doesn't that affect his rights? The question wasn't answered. The answer is it really affects his rights. He said you need to look at what those rights are. His view is he has a right to distribution and not to seek judicial review of wrongs that have hurt him. The company's not hurt by him being fired, by his salary being cut off, by his health care being cut off, by distributions being cut off, by threats of liquidation of roughly a block in downtown Wallingford of vintage apartments that have been in the family for nearly a century. Those are his rights. He's hurt. The LLC doesn't care. And as the respondents would have it, tough. He gets distributions if they give them, no judicial review. And that's in contumacious violation of the Declaratory Judgment Act. No right to vote, no right to sue derivatively. He didn't sue derivatively. This is like some of the speeches we're hearing. Something that's misstated doesn't take on new veracity just by dint of repetition. He never did sue derivatively. There's no reference to derivative in his complaint. There isn't anywhere in the record. Thank you very much for your attention, judges.
Thank you. All right. That concludes our calendar for this morning.
All rise.